Good morning, Holland Zealand. This is Kiri Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Our show today is a pre-recorded show for June 29th. Both Kiri and I are off today. Our show today is going to be, what kind of investor are you? So pull up your chair, up to the radio, get a mirror, look in the mirror and say, what kind of investor are you today, Kiri?
I think
we have some fun things to talk about.
We do. We absolutely do. And you know, people think, well, what does that have to do with investing? It has a lot to do with investing.
It does.
Because, you know, when we sit down with our clients, we ask them, you know, what kind of, to help get a feel for what kind of risk they're willing to take. So stay tuned for that, but we have a lot of good questions here, and our Social Security question of the week is, Jack, it is, how does a pension affect my Social Security benefits?
Well, for most people, it does have zero effect, but some people, Kiri, are exempt from Social Security. I have a few customers that are exempt from Social Security, one, railroad, two, that would be ministers. I've had two ministers and one railroad person that did not ever pay into Social Security, and therefore a pension from that place. And I know some people have that, Kiri, where, again, they have worked for the church especially, where they've not paid in,
yeah,
and they have a pension.
And with the church, a lot of times that is an option. I mean,
right, it's an option. Absolutely.
The pastor or the employee can opt out of Social Security, and that's a clause that the government has out there for these. But then if you're a government employee, you know, a government pension is going to offset some of that Social Security that you may had from other previous work outside the government.
Yeah, there's really a couple laws. One is called the Government Pension Offset, GPO, which is only applies if you receive a government pension not covered by Social Security. That's one. The other one is a windfall elimination provision, WEP, affects how we calculate your Social Security retirement or disability benefits. So in those are very minute cases. For the majority of the people, pensions do not affect your Social Security.
Yep, yep. Well, another important thing about the government pension offset, too, could, and the key word here is could, it may or could reduce the Social Security benefit of the spouse or widow.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yep, that's another good example. So very few does it apply to. Second question, I'm thinking about starting my own business. How can I save for retirement with being self-employed very easily, and what are my options?
A lot of great options out there for the single business owner, the small business owner. You know, the question we would ask is, do you want this money to be pre-tax or after-tax invested?
Yeah, it could be both.
And it could be both, exactly. So, you know, one of the things, and let's talk about a couple examples. Our business, Jack, being the size that it is and the number of employees, it really fits well for what they call out there's a simple IRA, which is really like a 401k plan for smaller businesses. Usually works well for businesses under 25 employees. And what this does, it allows the employer to give a match up to a maximum of 3% they are required to do. And the employee, if they put in the 3%, they get it matched. But if the employee doesn't put the money in, the employer doesn't have to match any at all. So it's a very simple, very low administrative cost. The money going into a simple IRA is pre-tax money. So that means when you take it out in the future, it is taxable. But great way. So administrative charges are basically $10 per year per the employee that participates in the plan. You know, that's one. But there are limitations on that to how much you can put in.
Right.
And that limit, sometimes people say, well, I'll do that, and then I'll also go out and I can do a Roth IRA.
On your own.
So, you know, in a case like that, the simple allows $17,000 to go in for this year, and you can put $5,500 into the Roth, and if you're over 50...
That'd be me.
And I'm going to be 50 this year. And I can put an additional $1,000 for $6,500 into the Roth. So there's a way that a self-employed person can put away over $20,000 a year.
And I always ask them, Kiri, here's the critical thing. You know, you forgot one of the, you go down the chain a little bit, and then I'll go from down the chain all the way to up the chain is you can just do a traditional IRA.
Exactly.
Very small, again, under 50, 5,500, over 50 like myself, and you, Kiri, 6,500. That's the basic one. Then you talked about the simple. The next one would be if you want to put more away, you need to do a 401k. And for an individual, this is an individual that wrote this in, what can I do? I'm all by myself. I have a number of people doing what they call a simple 401k. So it acts just like a 401k. It's a not a simple, a single 401k, which provides one person. You can pay yourself a profit sharing on top of that. And you can also do a match. And this allows you to put a lot more away, you know, maybe upwards of $30,000. So you tell us how much you want to put away, then we'll back into what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, some people talked about the old Keel plans and old SEP plans and profit sharing plans. You know, those aren't out there as much as what they used to be in the past, but those could be some viable alternatives also for an employer in that smaller in basis that wants to stick away a lot of money in 1 year. Or, you know, you can go all the way up the ladder to a full-blown 401k with a provision in it called a safe harbor provision. And yes, administratively, it's going to cost a little bit more to file and operate this, but the advantage is the huge contribution that you can make in 1 year's time.
Right, absolutely. Next question is, at what age does an annuity make sense? I do not know a lot about annuities.
Well, you know, does an annuity make sense? It could make sense for at any age. It depends on the circumstances behind this person.
Well, yeah, right, and there's some minimum ages. I mean, there's a minimum age to make sure. Usually, I think it's 21 or 25. I have a few doctors that they've maxed out their 401k. They've maxed out their non-deductible IRA. They've maxed out their wife's 401k, 403b, whatever they have. They've maxed out their wife's IRA. Once that's happened, then I go, well, we can do tax deferral on another thing, which is really unlimited, called an annuity. Now, Kerry, I can say I've never done an indexed annuity. I've never done a fixed annuity. I've only done the variable annuity. So as we talk about variable annuity, you're in the market, but a gross tax deferred until you take it out. It acts a little bit different than a 401k because everything's taxable in a 401k. The annuity, everything is taxed on growth, and your principal is not taxed.
That is correct. And, you know, annuity, like you mentioned, too, there's three basic type of annuities. There's fixed, an index, and variable. I have done maybe two fixed in my 20-year career, but a fixed is something where you put in and you're going to get a fixed rate of interest per year for a certain number of years, and it's deferred of taxes. So it's a lot like a CD, but it's put in a wrapper that allows the tax to be deferred on the growth. Now, an index CD, whole different animal. It sounds like you're in the market, but really you're not. It says that, hey, you're going to capture 60% of the market upside with a maximum of 8%. So if the market does, let's say 20% a year, 60% of that's 12%, they're only going to give you 8. So right. You're really not in the market. They're taking a picture of the market and giving you a portion of that.
Plus, you're not getting dividends reinvested, et cetera. You're not owning more shares. You're just owning a picture, which is, you know, some people, they like it. Again, I've never sold an index annuity or a fixed annuity. I just can't figure out where it fits. But a variable annuity, just for people out there, would fit for a younger person if they've maxed everything else out. That's my belief. Some people want to put it in the annuity first because there's sometimes some guarantees to it. It has to go by what fits the individual. It has to fit the individual's risk tolerance. And, you know, the variable annuities are very expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
They are. And we tell our listeners that. We share that with you. And we tell our clients that same thing. But there is a place for these type of products. And does it fit everyone? No, absolutely not. But in some cases where a person is, let's give an example, risk averse to the market, doesn't like the big swings, and wants some guarantees on their money, and are willing to pay the higher costs, this may be a spot for a portion of their money. Again, it has to fit. Not everyone is going to fit this picture.
Right. When Kerry says, does it fit? I mean, again, it has to fit your risk tolerance. It has to fit, do you understand the product? Do you understand how it works? Do you understand you can't take it out till 59 and a half? There's a lot of things, or you can do some other stuff to take it up before 59.5, but those are a little bit complicated, called a 72Q or 72T. Don't want to get into that right now, but you will know when your financial advisor says it fits here and only here. Does it do an annuity, and will it fit a younger person? Shoot, Kerry, I have doctors that are 32 putting money into annuity because they've exhausted every other means of pre-tax.
Hey, we should let our listeners know, Jack, how do they write in with their questions? Well, several ways they can get a hold of us. They can contact at our office. The number there is 931-1223, and you can get a hold of Janet at Extension 4. And if we're available, Jack or I or Richard, who's also in the office, will help in answering your questions. Or Janet will take a message, and we'll get back to you with some answers on that. So that's 931-1223. If you want to email us, that email address is CooleyGodfrey@LPL.com, CooleyGodfrey@LPL.com, and that's spelled K-O-E-L-E. And then Godfrey, G-O-D-F-R-E-Y, at LPL.com. And we'll take your questions. Not only will we get back to you personally, we will possibly use them on the air. So we appreciate the listeners that have written in with their questions.
Or you can call us toll-free at 866-512-7164. That's 866-512-7164. That is the toll-free number. Or you can email WHTC. We've been on WHTC, Kerry, last 8 or 9 years, maybe even 10 now. The email here at HTC is studio@whtc.com, and that'll get right to our box.
And when we are live, which we are not at today, but when we're live, feel free to call into the radio station. It's 395-1450. So, listeners, thanks for your questions each week. Today we're going to have coming up here is what kind of investor are you? And so stay tuned here. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey will be right back.
Welcome back to WHTC Money Matters. This is Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Our listeners today, this is a tape-recorded show for June 29th. We will not be doing any market update because Kerry and I are both out of the office today. Our show today, again, I want you to turn up the radio, pull up a chair, lay back in the lazy boy, lay on the couch, put the mirror up, and just say, what kind of investor are you? We're going to kind of go through some questions that we like to review with our customers, our prospects, you when you call in, to kind of measure what type of investor are you. And we go through these questions informally, but we want to ask you these exact. There's 8 questions we want to go over, and we'll kind of go over these, and then it gives you to, you know, are you an aggressive growth? Are you growth? Are you growth in income? Are you income with moderate growth? Or are you just basically, I want to keep my capital preservation. So
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a lot of different categories, and a lot of people categorize it different, but that's how we kind of categorize it, and that makes you fit into some type of box. So we can measure ourselves up against what the average is for your risk tolerance.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, listeners, the usual advice out there that, you know, Jack and I have said over the years, too, is that to use reason. Use reason when choosing investments and not emotion when making investment decisions. But we also understand that we're all human. Emotions play into this factor. And even if we think we can be cold and methodical about this, we all have emotions. And it is part of the investment decision process, and that's what makes everyone unique here. You know, if you better understand some of these questions that we're going to ask today and how it fits with your personality, it can help you be a better investor. So, first question, Jack.
What you're prepared to lose. So, you know, we knew we had a losing market, 07, 08, market down somewhere between 15 and 30% that year, depends on your risk tolerance. So,
And the market from the high to the low was down 37, almost 40%.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a pretty big loss. And so, you know, we always ask the questions, what is your risk tolerance and how much you want to lose? And it goes, you know, in our questions here, all the way from 5% to 50%, which are big numbers. Now, if you're putting money away for the next 30 years, which my kids are putting away, Kerry, and for you, probably the next 45 years for your kids, So we have to think, again, how much are you ready to lose before you say, geez, that's enough? And I can tell you right now, we didn't have anybody out of the market. We might have lowered the risk a little bit, but out of the market in 2007, 2008, because we had them well balanced, and we told them that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we lowered the risk, as you said. So, you know, one of the questions is, you know, what are you prepared to lose is you need to deal with how you balance the risk and reward that you're willing to take on your investments. You know, suppose you could replace part of your portfolio. The new portfolio has a 50-50 chance to increase by, let's say, 50%. Your standard of living during your lifetime. However, the new portfolio also has a 50 chance to reduce your standard of living. So you need to look at, are you willing to take, what's the maximum reduction you want to take in your standard of living? Is it 5? Is it 10%? You know, here's another example I always think of, Jack, is when a client buys individual stocks from us. I like and recommend that we go out and put a stop loss. And let's say the stop loss is 10%. So that means if you buy a stock at $10, a 10% stop loss is $9. And so if that stock goes down to 9, it's going to get you out of it. Now, if it goes up, that 10% price is going to move up. So let's say it goes from 10 to 12. 10% of $12 is now it's 10.80. So it keeps moving up. It won't go down then, but that's another way that you can have a risk reward, and you can put in what you're willing to lose in that case.
Now, for those people, Kerry, that are putting in money into a 401k for the next 20, 25 years, or even 10 to 15 years, you know, you're buying in a volatile market on an ongoing basis. You know, or if you look back to the 80s and 90s, I mean, the market was up 10%, 12%, 13%, 25%. It's ridiculous. And people just made a lot of money because there was no down markets during that time frame until you get to 99, basically. So, but when we're, the next question, Kerry, is do bad choices bug you? I mean, if you can't sleep at night, I say that to a lot of people, if you can't sleep at night, we need to make some changes. And here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to make changes. You know, we're going to lower what you're doing, lower the risk tolerance, but also limit what you're going to get on the upside. So, you know, we have a number of products that do this, switching people, you know, again, out of equities to a certain extent. You know, when the market's going down, which is always a good time to buy if you are still earning money, and if you're having some of your portfolio, this is a retiree today. You know, I've spoke to like three retirees this week planning for retirement. I always said you always need one of your buckets needs to have growth to it. Because that's the only way you're going to beat inflation, and we calculate inflation to be 3.2% a year.
Well, and you know, when you look at that question too, Jack, do bad choices bug you? You know, I look at how I make some decisions. A lot of times I will look and make a choice, and I'll try and get information about how this alternative, how would it make me feel, good or bad. I look at the pros and cons to it. And, you know, you need to look at, you know, the statement. It says, if you can answer that after all those things, does the statement describe you well? Does it describe you somewhat? Does it not describe you at all? So do bad choices bug you? And if they bug you a lot and you say it describes me well, well, that's going to tell us a lot as an advisor. It's going to tell us that we're going to invest more conservatively, and that also means this, that when you come in my office a year from now and the market, the S&P 500 is up over 20%, your portfolio is not going to be up that. It'll still be up, but it'll be up much more conservatively. So you always have to remember to compare apples to apples, and that you have to go back to what was the objective of reducing that risk, and if bad choices bug you, you need to reduce that by having the right type of investments.
Right, and here's one of the critical things is, you know, sometimes we'll review somebody's portfolio and say, well, why would my 401k do better than what I have with you? And I say it because you've won. You haven't added to what you have here at our office, Cooley Godfrey, but on your 401k, you keep on buying every week or every 2 weeks or once a month, and you've dollar cost average when the markets are down or flat.
Mm-hmm.
And that means a lot more when you compare to a portfolio that hasn't had any new money for a long time. So you can't compare those two, especially when you're in a down market and buying cheaper, and then a market responds, and that's what you look at is buying low, and you know now it's high, and you take a look at it. So
well, you know, and here's another interesting little fact about some of these questions that we're asking today. You know, going back to question one, you know, are you prepared to lose? You know, surveys out there show that the maximum that people are willing to lose or change in cost of living is 12.5%, meaning that, you know, pain outweighs the joy by 4-1, and usually men are willing to take a little bit more risk than women. It is just some of the survey results that show out there from these first two that we're asking you. What are you prepared to lose, and do bad choices bug you?
Yeah, here's number three. Can you beat the market? Well, you know, that's going to be kind of a risk taker there. Can you beat the market? Because we have this question all the time. You know, I think I'll just do it on my own. And I'll just give you an example where, Carrie, we have a customer in our office who decided to, I'm just going to, you know, we have a managed account platform where customers can use it as their trading platform, which we allow them to do for in certain circumstances, where this person has went out and has bought things, sold things on his own. And I've shown him over the last year to date where if you'd have left it with me, it would have been at the lower end, 6%, in the upper end year to date, 15%+. And what he's done is he's flat for the year to date because he's uncertain what he's doing. You know, if it goes down, he wants to sell. If it goes up, he wants to buy more. So he's like buy high, sell low. That's the mentality that this person has had. And it's hard to then say, yep, you're right. Let's go back to manage money where, you know, we're managing the downside probably more than we're managing the upside.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think about that. What are you doing yourself before you say, I don't think I can beat the market. Let's let somebody else handle it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you think you can beat the market, and we're one of the first to say out there is, then, you know, we're probably not the cheapest place to go, and you need to go to an online firm where you can do trades for a lot less in cost. And we tell our prospective clients that what they're thinking. So you have to look at the costs involved in it also. Do you want to have 100% hands-on? Do you want to be looking at your account every day? Do you want to be trading your account every day? Well, then we wouldn't be the guys for you.
No, number four, here it goes. Number four, what we're talking about is, you know, what kind of investor are you? It's a tape show. We're running this show June 29th. So, you know, we want you to look in the mirror and say that. We went through three questions. Number four is what type of...
No, four is attention to details. Do you pay attention to details is the question you ask yourself. Now, going back to that ladies and men survey, ladies are usually... pay a lot more attention to details. I raise my hand. My wife is that way. She's a very detailed person. When we do a dinner at home or we plan a dinner for the school fundraiser, she has the details down. We know what we're going to do. And, you know, do you save everything? Sometimes, you know, too much, don't like to spend any money. You know, those are people that would fit into that category that like to pay attention to details.
So, yeah, I agree with that entirely, Carrie. I mean, some people, I believe and you believe, are too detail-oriented where you have to own the fund more than 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Or you have
yeah.
to own the stock more than 5 seconds. I mean, that goes back to what kind of risk taker are you? You have to be patient. I mean, you can't buy... any companies, you know, they go up and down over time. And, of course, you want them to go up over time and not down. But you have to be patient to let that investment work. So, number five, life of the party. How would you describe yourself as life of the party? Yeah, I'll take some of that. Yeah, I'll buy that. Yeah, we'll do that. So, are you the life of the party?
Yeah, you need to ask, you know, would you describe yourself as enthusiastic, talkative, outgoing? Would you say you don't mind being the center of attention and that you feel comfortable around people and that you tend to start conversations? So if you answer that definitely or somewhat or not at all, you know, extroverts is, you know, psychologists call them the life of the party. They put themselves out there. They don't care if they get a little bit embarrassed because they don't. They just don't. You know, a lot of times people like this, they're largely immune to regret, you know, and other common characteristics, they make good salespeople, whether selling a product or themselves a lot of times. So, you know, that's just one of the type of people that are out there. What's another type of person that is out there?
Well, I mean, there's also one with a generous spirit. I mean, a generous spirit is one where you take a look at, you know, and this is one where I caution people when you retire. The generous speaker says, you know, my daughter needs some money. My son needs money for his apartment. My granddaughter needs money for college. My son just lost his job. My husband just wrecked the car. So all these things come into a generous spirit where, yep, that's okay. You know, we're not going to fix up the car. Or we're just going to buy a new one. No, fix up the car for your $1,000 deductible. So there is... You know, life of the party, a generous spirit, that's where it gets people into trouble is you don't take time to do financial planning.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, listeners, keep those first in mind here. We're going to review them when we come back from our break and then cover the last ones here. But today we're talking about what kind of investor are you? Trying to get yourself to look in the mirror and find out what kind of investor are you. And this will help make good investment decisions down the road. So you're listening to WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey, WHTC Money Matters. We're talking today, pre-recorded, that would be June 29th. Our show today is What Kind of Investor Are You? We've kind of went through the first six, Kerry. We'll kind of repeat what those are. You know, are you prepared to lose money? Do bad choices bug you?
Attention to details. Do you like to pay attention to details?
Yep.
Are you the life of the party?
A generous spirit. Can you beat the market? Last two, a vivid imagination. You know, can you, some people think they're going to have $2 million. You know, do you really visualize that you're going to retire at 55? So sometimes a virtual or a vivid imagination might get you into trouble of what you think you're going to have. We say, well, how are you going to get there? How are you going to retire at 62 when you only have $100,000? You know, you have to be a realist, which leads us to the next one,
yeah.
Which is...
Well, and the next one is, are you a worrywart? You know, would you describe yourself as anxious, touchy, unstable? And are you easily disturbed, irritated easily, and worry about things? Then you could fall into the category of worrywart.
Yep, and I tell people, Kerry, you need to do a financial plan. You know, I've worked with two couples here recently. Just had one in the office yesterday where he wants to retire in November. So I'm trying to create a visual plan for them so that it's their number. You know, people can just retire in their car and have a peanut butter sandwich, and if that's what they want to live, that's fine. But we're trying to look at the numbers, look at their expenses. How are you going to pick up medical? We need to create a vision and get it right down to the detail of when you can retire, what's life going to be like. So you don't want to have people be a worrywart. You want them to imagine what it's going to be like. You know, you want them to be generous because, you know, we want them to have a strategy of making sure that, you know, you can do your RMD this year and give it to the church. We know that you should be giving highly appreciated stock in your brokerage account to the church. So we want to create and solve some of these issues that you have, getting you back to reality. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to go through, I don't know, we have seven or eight different types of people. You know, we went through what you feel like. Now we're going to go through some of the different types of investors, which is what you are, one of the listeners out here.
Yeah, do you know yourself, basically? And, you know, we talk about, going back to the beginning here, what we talked about is they say you need to take emotion out of it, but you also need to understand who you are as an investor. You need to understand who you are as a person so that you can make better investment choices. And, you know, I'll start with the one on this little chart that we have. Are you a risk taker, which we talked about earlier? And, you know, a risk taker, if you're a risk taker, men usually are more prone and willing to tolerate risk than women. And the young are more willing to tolerate risk than the old, you know, so, you know, those are common categories there under risk taker, but, you know, you need to ask yourself, are you a risk taker? Questions to ask, are you willing to go bungee jumping? Are you willing to jump out of an airplane and, you know, go parachute jumping? You know, then you might be a risk taker.
That's what I've done, Kerry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been fun. And I'm a risk taker, not so much in the market, but, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. You're at a younger age. You have time to take risk to compensate for the risk you've taken. But once you get to be a year or two or three from retirement, or actually in retirement, you need to dial down that risk, because our goal here at Cooley Godfrey is to say, once you retire, our goal is to keep your assets, not so much to grow them, give you a distribution, keep your principal the same, and give you a distribution that fits you. So we want to take less risk, but when you're young, you know, we want to make sure that you have a balanced portfolio and you can afford to take a little bit more risk in your portfolio. What does that mean, taking more risk? Well, there's some outliers out there that a young person might have a little bit higher percentage. And when I say that, I mean they can buy some more technology stocks or mutual funds. They could buy more, a little bit more into real estate, take some risk, because, you know, the people who are buying real estate in the last year have been handsomely rewarded. You know, our office is in Zeeland. Right now, I think the average house is up for sale in Zeeland for 5 days.
Wow.
I mean, that
well, and in the area, we even heard that the average house between 100 and 200,000 is average 30 days on the market.
Yeah. So, you know, but if you did this 3 years ago, that would have a little bit more risk, because you could have bought at the top and now you're selling at the bottom. Now you're buying at the bottom and selling at the top potentially. So risk taking is important, that you understand it. When is it appropriate to take the right risk? So that's very important that you understand that.
How about next one? Regretful. Are you a regretful type of person? And kind of using the survey, you know, women have a tendency to have a higher to regret or to be regretful on things, where a younger person, women have regret things a little bit more than men, and the young have a higher propensity to regret things than the old. And I think of that one, I thought, but that's probably because the old have been through a lot more and
yes,
have experienced
yes.
a lot more, and just
yep.
from, you know, pure experience, they are probably more relaxed about things.
Yeah, just because the young don't have as much experience. And I always make sure that, you know, Kerry, when I get that 17-year-old or 16-year-old that's got their first job, they're putting money into a Roth IRA, I want to make sure that they buy boring stuff initially. Get their feet wet, know what a dividend is and know what interest is, know the companies are buying large companies, know that they're not taking much risk, and start to ratchet up the risk once we have a number of conversations. But you want people out of the gate, young people, to be successful investors. But then you can, again, buy a little bit higher risk stuff as they get older, they understand that, and you know what their situation is. But, you know, older people, you know, sometimes they can be off the chart in terms of regretful, because, you know, a lot of people want that FDIC behind it, and they're willing to pay anything, which is getting no interest, but it's safe, versus can we get you, you know, 4 or 5% with a little bit of risk.
Yeah, so it's different. You know, today, listeners, we're talking about what kind of investor are you, and then we're on to this section called Know Yourself, and we've talked about, are you a risk taker? Are you a regretful type of person? Are you overconfident? Let's talk about conscientious. Are you a conscientious person? Do you care for others? You know, women in this category tend to be more conscientious than men, and conscientious people have a higher, you know, propensity for regret and a low tolerance for risk. So I find that interesting, you know, how all those kind of flow together under that same category of conscientious.
And, you know, conscientious is a very nice word to say to a person, you're very conscientious. But when you try to limit the risk based on that higher propensity for regret. Sometimes that gets you into problems because, you know, I've heard the term, I hate real estate. I never want to invest in real estate. It's a bad investment. Kerry, I always say real estate is the best investment you'll ever have. You know, they're not making any more ground. A natural resource is a place you want to be. It's just not the place you want to be all the time. But if you can hold this long enough, it's always your best investment. Always it goes up. So, you know, it's just one that you want to be conscientious, but not to a fault.
Oh, exactly.
Not to a fault.
Exactly. How about anxious? Are you an anxious person? Are you an anxious type of investor? You know, anxious people tend to make investment moves due to fear a lot of times and pessimism, and they probably aren't saving much because if they're anxious and fearful of the market, they don't want to put their money into the market a lot of times. And so, you know, you need to ask yourself, are you an anxious person? And if you are, there's a different way you need to go about investing, and you may have to have some investments that offer some safety nets or measures on it, or, you know, like we talked at the beginning of the show, maybe an annuity with some insurance on it is going to be a better fit for an anxious person. So, again, you have to look at who you are as a person and plug in some of the investments to fit, you know, what you like to do and not maybe take too much risk or, you know, cause too much fear, because all of a sudden you get too much emotion in this, then you're not going to make the right decisions at all.
Yep, and people get caught up in being too anxious because their skill set, their knowledge set, what they believe in is so limited. So, you know, they'll come in and they'll say, well, I just want to buy this, or I like this. So I always say, you know, it's always your money, but let's talk about stuff on the right, talk about stuff on the left, talk about the middle, and try to calm their fear and pessimism because their skill set, again, their knowledge is limited in what these products are. You know, we believe that people always should have something in emerging markets just because we know that that's where the majority of the growth is. But it's highly volatile, but it's one of your best investments. We believe people ought to have so much in REITs, REIT, Real Estate Investment Trusts, which buy property in a lot of different segments. It's a mutual fund or actually buy property. But you have to get exposed, which is really the next one I want to talk about, which is open. Some people are open to ideas, and those are typically the best investors, where, okay, let's discuss it, let's review it, let's understand it, and then let's maybe buy some.
Yeah, and a lot of times they're not always people that pay a lot of attention to their investments, and that's where they know that if they fall into this category, they need to hire somebody out there that does this for them. I think of some of the wealthiest people in the world. I think of Bill Gates. I think of the former CEO of Apple, how creative these people and forward-thinking they were, but they relied on other people to help take care of their money.
Expertise, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it being an open investor, I think, is always what I would call the best investor, because they're always open to learn, always open to understand what you're trying to do, versus saying, nope, I'm not interested in that. That's the first thing you say here sometimes, is I'm not interested. Well, how do you know you're not interested when you don't know what it's about? The last one we're talking about here is agreeable. And sometimes you could be open, but too agreeable, which is also not a good thing, because we see people who go to the conservative side, go to other financial institutions, where they get sold a five-year FDIC behind it for 0.5%,
mm-hmm.
or 0.75% for 5 years.
Yeah, and that's where it's important to always ask questions. You know, why do you think this fits my needs? And, you know, sometimes you can be way too agreeable, and you could be in way too many conservative investments, and you need to realize that you could fall into some of these other categories that we talked about. So agreeable is not a bad thing.
It's no, just, not at all.
It's just saying that if you are that type of person, be willing to say, hey, I know I'm this type of person, so I need to ask more questions. I need to maybe, hey, I meet with this person, but I'm going to take a couple days to think about it before I agree upon it, and I can go home and look at it a little closer or get a second opinion on it.
Yeah, but as we come to the end of our show here, we're talking about what kind of investor are you, and that could be an extrovert, a risk taker, a regretful investor, overconfident investor, conscientious, obnoxious, or an open. All of these categories fit into the type of investor you might look at when you look in the mirror. And over time, some people go to the left, some people go to the right, but we want to make sure that you have a financial planner who is open to listening to you and listening to your risk tolerance and planning with you, planning your retirement, planning your future. And it takes time. Time in the market is really crucial.
Yep.
Time.
Yep, time in the market. Listeners, we want to thank you for listening. Just a reminder, this is a pre-recorded show on what kind of investor are you. And next week's topic is going to be the inheritance conversation. And this will be another good show because we want you to, you know, pull up that chair and be willing to talk to your parents, in-laws, children about the inheritance conversation that it's very important to have. So, listeners, you've been listening to WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley
and Jack Godfrey. We'll talk to you live next week.